to figure it out and to try and decipher what the Jets maybe could do, should do. We bring in Connor Rogers. Connor, of course, with NBC Sports, with SNY, and a draft expert. Hey, Connor, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Lori, thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing well. I know you. It was a busy week for you. I saw some of the interviews and all kinds of things you were doing with NBC. First question, before we put the Jets on the clock at number two and we try and solve all their problems, but first, just big picture in terms of this NFL draft class and the combine, what was the most surprising thing you heard this week at the combine?
Ooh, that's a good one. Surprising. You always want to be careful. You always want to hope that you're never too shocked, right, going into it. I think it's, to me, it was more as a whole how tactically, like, sound the entire process has become, where guys only do things if they know that they're going to do well in that specific event, and then they kind of tuck away things that they're still working on or they're not as comfortable with, you know, for their pro day or just not at all. And I think it's become so amplified in that way that it's kind of leading to this narrative that these are the most athletic groups of all time, when it's really just kind of filtering out what guys aren't good at and what they are good at. And I think teams are kind of trying to figure out, using whether it's the GPS systems in games or things like that, that kind of stuff has kind of become the big talking point of what is the future of the NFL scouting combine, with agents and players trying to kind of, I think, manipulate it is a strong way to put it. But that would be the main thing from the combine. In terms of the actual pro market, you know, this isn't surprising, but my take kind of spins it the other way. There was so much chatter about Kyler Murray and the Jets that I almost find it hard to believe, if you understand what I'm saying, mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, this is so loud at this point that usually when something reaches this peak of buzz and news, that you don't expect it to happen because it feels like it's going that way for a reason. Now, I will say the Jets are extremely desperate at quarterback, where you can't rule out anything. And it did feel like everything I heard at the combine is that Arizona is certainly moving on from Kyler Murray and potentially from Malik Willis, a free agent. So that was something out there that was the chatter that was a little hard to decipher at times.
So, all right, let's dive into the Jets. And if if now Darren Mooji, you know, calls you up and says, you know, Connor, you've been covering the team for a while, doing those pre and post game shows, and I, you know, want your thoughts on this. Do you look at GM and head coach right now as having, you know, because I think this relates to whether or not you would, if you were the Jets, want Kyler Murray right now or not? Do you look at the head coach and GM as having the same priorities and timeline and urgency? If you were talking to the GM, and what should you do? Get Kyler or not? Draft a quarterback or your QB strategy? Would the GM strategy right now be different than the head coach's?
Absolutely, right? Mm-hmm. Which makes this so difficult. Now, I think a lot of people have kind of gotten over their skis, and I've seen the talking point narrative turn where everybody's looking at it and going, well, Darren Mooji has a lot more job security than Aaron Glenn. Yep. And Woody Johnson is a guy that can, you know, he reads into things, he hears the noise, he could change his mind at any moment very sharply and quickly. And there's a world where Darren Mooji has another really good draft. And from a asset management standpoint for the draft cap space, they're set up really nicely going into 2027.
Yep.
And Woody steps back and goes, actually, this guy's done a really, really good job, even though we haven't won a lot of games the last 2 years and the coaching staff just hasn't shown they have it. That can happen. Right now, that's not the case within the Jets organization from everybody I talk to. Darren Mooji is still the guy that Aaron Glenn picked to be his personnel evaluator. This is still Aaron Glenn's organization. Has Mooji shown to be able to carry his weight at times and acquire picks and move players for premium returns and get some players for lower draft capital that can help out, whether it's Harrison Phillips, Jawan Briggs, Jarvis Brownlee, adds like that? Yeah, he's shown that, and that's definitely increased his clout in the organization. But if I was, let's put it like this, real simply, Lori, going back to your question. if I was Darren Mooji and I felt like I was on an even playing field right now with Aaron Glenn, that I would not be just reaching for a quarterback or overspending for a quarterback.
Right.
I would stay pretty low event this offseason at that position, whether that's acquiring somebody's backup that's under contract, whether that is just going for a game manager. Even if you felt like, and from the combine, I don't think Ty Simpson is escaping, is getting out of the first round anymore. But if there's a world where he fell to 33, mm-hmm. if you had a low event quarterback on the roster and you want to take him at 33, that's fine. But the second overall pick and the 16th overall pick need to be used on premium players that are for the long term of this organization. Well, Aaron Glenn, like, you nailed it. Aaron Glenn's got to win games this year. Aaron Glenn's got to show significant improvement. The Jets were lost last year. They were lost for a long stretch to start the season. They were lost for a long stretch to end the season. It felt like in the beginning of the year, they had full intentions to win. It felt like at the end of the year, you could argue the opposite, starting Brady Cook and everything like that. But you could evaluate him in a vacuum. So as it stands right now, yeah, Darren Mooji should be doing everything he can to set up this roster that it's as best as possible when they take a quarterback in 2027. But is that how it's going to play out when you have a coach on the hot seat? I need to see that actually happen.
So, okay, now let's say you're talking to Mooji, the GM, and he recognizes that Aaron Glenn is going to put pressure on him. I might argue that the best thing that they could do would be, you know, as you were just saying, I would not invest a lot of money in a quarterback this year. I'd actually probably draft a quarterback not in the first round, probably play him and not care if he was great and turned into a Jackson Dart type and you hit on somebody who you didn't draft in the first round, though. Great, and maybe he can be a backup for you in the future, or he helps you on a tanking strategy towards getting the first overall pick in 2027. Like, I'd be thrilled. Those are productive things to move forward. But I don't know that Mooji's going to have that option, and if you're Aaron Glenn, you are absolutely on the hot seat. You have to show progress this year, and if it busts all out, you're probably not the one who's going to be around to coach that young player in 2027. So now Mooji's in this weird position with his head coach who needs to win games. How would you evaluate a Kyler Murray? Would you rather have something like that, or would you rather, if Glenn is pressuring you, that you're using a first round pick that's, you know, maybe 16 overall on and drafting somebody like Simpson?
Right, that's the tricky one. Now, I'll put the Kyler situation like this to get that one out of the way first. I don't think Kyler Murray's going to move the needle, but you nailed it that coaches ask for, you know, certain things, guys they believe they could turn around, guys they feel like can help. You know, I think we've almost, as a society, gone too far one way with Kyler Murray, that he's actually better than the perception,
yep.
Which is, you know, these things happen in the NFL. A guy has a guy gets hurt and then has enough. Bad year in a bad organization, all of a sudden, all of, you know, football fandom understandably thinks he's terrible, and I think that's a little unfair to Kyler Murray. I think the questions around Kyler have also been, like, can he galvanize an NFL locker room? And I think there's a lot of whispers that, so far, no, which is, that's fair criticism if all those things are true. Now, if you're not going to trade for Kyler, you're not going to take on any of the money, you're not going to give up any asset, you're going to force Arizona to cut him. And
right.
I think Arizona is in a situation where their writing is on the wall and they're going to have to do that because NFL teams are smart for the most part. They kind of know when a team has no options and they got to move on from a guy, and that's that. Especially Arizona, from everything I had heard at the Combine, is going to make a play for Malik Willis. Well, if they're going to do that, they're going to want to kind of have their quarterback room, at least Kyler, out of it. Jacoby Brissett is under contract as a backup, and that's fine. So if you're the Jets, can you get Kyler in a situation not identical, but somewhat reminiscent of what the Giants did with Russell Wilson,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, this guy's made so much money in one place and he's making a lot of money paid out that you got him on such a low end financial deal that the money isn't, you know, and hey, if you're Kyler Murray and you believe in your talent as a former number one overall pick, maybe you don't want to sign a contract that's for term beyond this year.
Right.
Because you think, in your head, I'm going to play pretty well. Every quarterback under the sun gets paid, even backups. I'll just go hit the free agent market again next year. Let's give this thing a run. So So can you get Kyler Murray on a one-year deal that's pretty low-end and you're not really putting much money beyond this year? That's fine. I mean, that's not going to hurt your organization. And then a lot of people, the counter-argument to that is understandably, well, the Jets winning 6 games or 7 games next year is the worst thing that can happen to them. I think that's a fine line to walk in the NFL. They acquired 3 future first-round picks so they can hopefully navigate the board. I know as NFL draft analysts, we fall into this trap of next year will be better, next year will be better. Next year will be a better quarterback class. I cover the Big Ten for NBC. We have Notre Dame as well. They have a very good young quarterback by the name of CJ Carr. There are a couple quarterbacks that went back to school this year that have pretty high expectations for next year. This is a Fernando Mendoza and maybe Ty Simpson in that Tyler Shuck, Jackson Dart range class. Next year we'll have more quarterbacks. So to answer your question, you know, I would rather kind of ride out a Kyler one-year deal that costs nothing in that scenario than use the 16th overall pick on a guy. If you take Ty Simpson, who I like, he's good. There's a lot of good things about Ty Simpson. But if you take him at 16, in my opinion, your regime has planted the flag on him being the guy, where if it doesn't look pretty when he eventually plays, you could all be out on the street and somebody else is making all those picks in 2027.
Talking to Connor Rogers about the Jets and about the NFL draft and the combine. All right, so let's look back to the combine and some of the players that you saw there. And who do you think, you know, having seen those players as well as looked at them, you know, all season long, who do you think the Jets should be looking at for number 2 overall?
I think Arvell Reese starts at the top of this list, the Ohio State linebacker. I mean, the thing with Arvell is he's 20 years old. He played off the ball this year, and he's such a great size, speed athlete. He tested out of this world. The tape is real. He does so many good things at that off-ball linebacker position now, which is a need for the Jets. But you look at the heavy hands and the power he can play with and his little limited opportunities on the edge. He might develop as an edge pass rusher. And you look at the Jets defense, you know, they bring back Carl Dunbar, who's coached 3-4 fronts his whole life. Maybe their base front will play a lot more 3-4 looks. You traded Jermaine Johnson. I mean, you could play Arvell Reese as an outside linebacker across from Will McDonald with Harrison Phillips, Devondre Sweat, and Juwan Briggs on their interior. Mm-hmm. And this is before they make any free agent moves, and they'll make some. That's a pretty good front if you can solidify middle linebacker in between those guys. And the same could be said for David Bailey from Texas Tech. Now, he's a pure pass rusher, and I think the upside isn't as high with Bailey as it is with Reese, and the versatility isn't as high. But if you need somebody today to get after the quarterback, Bailey is a more polished product at rushing the quarterback today than Arvell Reese. And then I'll give you one more because the door cracked open. It's not the favorite. But Arvell Reese's running mate, Sonny Styles, mm-hmm. was out of this world. And the difference with Sonny Styles compared to Reese and Bailey is his intangibles and leadership is off the charts, where he was the guy at Ohio State everybody followed. He's the guy that's going to be the face of your defense. And I don't think he'll develop into a pass rusher like the other two. Obviously, there's the expectations there. I think he will remain at off-ball linebacker. 2 years ago, he was starting at safety.
Right.
So it's amazing what he's become and what he is. But that's somebody that, you know, maybe he's the Fred Warner of your defense.
Mm-hmm.
As anybody, if you told them they could have a Fred Warner in this draft, would take him 2 overall. So the door's at least cracked open for Sonny Styles. I call Reese the favorite. Bailey is in the mix. You asked me at the top of the show, one of the most surprising things I heard at the combine, another nugget to add, and I don't think it'll happen at 2. I think Jeremiah, I love the Notre Dame running back, is going in the top 5 of this draft. Every mock draft has had him to the Commanders at 7, the Saints at 8, or the Chiefs at 9, and sometimes beyond that. He's too good. He's too impressive of a human and athlete, and people are dying for offense in this draft. I think he's going to Arizona, Tennessee, or the New York Giants.
And where do you usually stand on that whole argument, position value and being able to take a running back? Is it different this year based on the composition of this draft where there, you know, a lot of people feel like there aren't as many blue chippers, so that puts him in play, a running back in top 5? Or is it also the composition of certain teams that make this team is set up in a way that you feel like they can capitalize on him?
So there's 3 elements to this, and you nailed it at the end there. with, you know, the composition of the draft. It's the fact that, you know, there's three guys I think that are in the argument right now as the best overall player in the draft. That's Jeremiah Love, that's Caleb Downs, the safety from Ohio State, and Sonny Styles, the linebacker from Ohio State. The most impactful players outside of, you know, obviously playing the quarterback position, so Mendoza would be in that combo today. And so that's number one. Number two, if you're going to be that kind of running back taken in the top 10, you need to be a dynamic pass catcher. He is. Number three, you need to have breakaway game-changing speed to flip the script at any moment of the game. He does. He ran sub 4.4, and he did that at Notre Dame all the time, and he broke tackles all the time. So the profile you're looking at is, you know, teams will look at is, can we find our Jahmyr Gibbs? Can we find our Bijan Robinson? And on Saquon Barkley, and on it goes. And Jeremiah Love teams think he's exactly that. They think they can run, feature the entire offense through him, similar to what the 49ers did this year with Christian McCaffrey, a year he was in the conversation to be the offensive player of the year with all the receiving production he had on top of being a reliable running back presence. So, and you know, obviously he checks all the boxes as a in terms of character as well, where you know exactly what you're getting from the guy every single day you show up to the facility. So that's a big equation of why Love will be so highly coveted in this draft.
All right, before I let you go, after spending the week out there interviewing a number of players, obviously watching a lot of the drills, hearing the rumors, give me two or three that would be, call them Connor's guys, your plant your flag guys, where you are higher on somebody than maybe the general consensus is.
I love questions like this because it allows, you know, draft analysts to kind of be able to differentiate themselves, you know, in this saturated field of rankings and everything.
Yeah.
The first guy I'll say would be Skylar Bell, the receiver from UConn. I mean, I said it when I met him. I was like, I'm going to have a little bias here because you're from the Bronx. My dad worked in the Bronx for 36 years as captain of a firehouse. Like, I'm a New York guy, and it didn't even need to be biased because by the time I was done talking to him after 15 minutes, I was like, this guy is already a professional athlete. It's the fact that, you know, he passed up serious lucrative NIL offers to leave UConn last year because he felt like he believed in development at a program for the long term rather than the short term gain. And that's a big risk. And I think the way he prepares, his athletic testing was phenomenal at the combine. The drills were great. He's somebody that he had a monster year, over 100 catches, 13 touchdowns. UConn built the entire plane of their offense out of him. They used him like Zay Flowers and the Ravens, where you need to know where he is pre-snap all the time because the way they use him in the backfield slot and a receiver. He's got great ball skills, and he's just an absolute professional. So
Where do you expect him to go right now, ballpark?
I thought third or fourth round before the combine. I don't know how he doesn't go in that run of late second round receivers. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how. It's just there's too much of a floor there, and then the athleticism gives you the ceiling.
Yeah.
And another one in that grouping is Jermaine Bernard, the wide receiver from Alabama. Yep. That everybody acts bored of him, and I'm like, man, you are just not like a receiver. And I was like, I mean that in the nicest way. I was like, you have this gritty mindset. You play a different brand of football, and he's like, I actually started playing guard when I started playing football as a kid. And it made me burst out laughing. Guard.
But to your point, I think also, and we've seen this with teams, whether it's the 49ers or the Rams, where wide receivers block, and what a difference that makes also for a running game. And Bernard strikes me as he's going to be one of those
Nailed
players.
It.
Yeah.
Yep. So Skylar Bell, Jeremy Bernard, two receivers that I like more than most. And then I'll give you a tight end in that everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon now because of the testing. But Sam Roush was my tight end four back in December. You're a Stanford guy. Your mom played college volleyball. You know, her father played in the NFL for, I think, 10-plus years. Uncles played in the NFL. Dad played college football. He's got great size, good straight-line speed, great blocking, good after the catch. Like, listen, I'm not going to call anybody Tucker Kraft. But if you want that third rounder that can have that trajectory of like, whoa, this guy fell to the third or fourth round, and now he's one of the top 15 tight ends in the league because he blocks and makes plays with the ball in his hands. Sam Roush from Stanford would be my third guy as well. So I like the pass catchers, you could tell.
All right, then I guess really last is just for Jets fans, is if the Jets don't end up drafting Simpson, they don't take that early quarterback, is there a quarterback that you would consider that maybe a little bit later back?
Yeah, you know, the obvious one after Simpson is Garrett Nussmeier, so I'll give you a more interesting answer than that because, you know, he'll probably go on day two, and it's, you know, he's somebody that you can talk yourself into for sure. Way deeper than that, Cole Payton from North Dakota State is really interesting because he's got great size. He's built like a linebacker. He's 235 pounds, pretty much of muscle, another great athlete. He just waited around North Dakota State for 4 years on the bench and then got to start his final year, and you're like, God, North Dakota State just has this guy hanging around, big arm, can run, you know, smart. It looked the part at the Senior Bowl where, you know, the competition's elevated for a North Dakota State guy. What is it going to look like in that environment? He didn't look scared at all. So if I'm looking at a day three quarterback where I'm like, he might be like a, you know, kind of a spunky backup, like a backup with some grit that can give you some life and give you a spark. Cole Payton, I think he just finds a way to hang around because of that arm and athleticism, and a boring, boring quarterback class. He gives me some life.
All right, and then just a little a speed round here. One last one, which has nothing to do with the draft or the Jets, but you are also the co-host of Mets Pod. Did you see the Brandon Nimmo interview quotes that have been popping from, whether it's from the Will Salmon interview, the Joel Sherman article, of all the mishigas going on in the Mets clubhouse with Nimmo? What's your take on Brandon Nimmo and some of these comments coming out?
So I saw a lot of the headlines while I was at the Combine, and these are always tricky, right? Because it's one of those situations where I think Nimmo was loved by the fan base because of the way he played and worked, and absolutely. And I think he probably felt... you know, he felt like his loyalty was not appreciated probably after how things went down this offseason. But, you know, on the flip side of it, and maybe I've just become too kind of, you know, hardened as a Mets fan my whole life, is that, like, that core came close and they didn't win anything. And it's not Brandon Nimmo's fault, but you're talking about an aging player with 5 years left on his deal.
Yep.
That's a defensive liability.
Yep.
That, you know, the advanced numbers, and I know some people don't want to hear this, they love Brandon Nimmo, and I get it. You know, the advanced numbers in pressure clutch situations were not pretty, and that's a big problem for this Mets team, and you want to shake it up. Like, those are the kind of guys that, it's not just Nimmo, right? Like, McNeil's gone. Pete Alonso's gone. It's, you know, it's one of those ones where you don't want to disrespect a guy that was a really, really good Met. But maybe I'm in the minority. I don't mind David Stearns trying something different this offseason than continuously running back the same thing that, outside of the magic carpet ride of the NLCS that one year, it felt like that core just kind of underachieved more often than not. And I hope these guys can kind of kill that narrative and actually get the Mets consistently to the playoffs. We'll see. Long way to go, but we'll see.
All right, Connor Rogers does a great job covering the draft, covering prospects for NBC and other outlets. Connor, appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Great talking to you, Lori. Thanks for having me.